At this time, I should briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at Central are 1 year of continuous sobriety, have Central as your home group, and have attended a group conscience meeting. And I'm Suzanne, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
My sobriety date is 8/18 of 87, just a reminder of what God can do with a drunk like me. It's only through God that I stand here tonight. And I have attended a group conscience meeting very actively. And if you ever are bored on a Sunday, it's a great place to come and grow up. So I'll share on that. My sobriety is really a gift to me today. And I think the longer I stay sober and keep doing the deal and trudging the road like we talk about, I realize what a gift I really have. And we have a friend that passed away this past weekend as a result of picking up a drink. He had had a number of years. He was in his teens in sobriety, and I guess he hit one of those dark spots that I think we all hit in sobriety. And the thought of a drink, I guess, occurred, and he picked up a drink. And we are going to go to his memorial service next weekend. And that's what I was told when I first got here. I was told to get a nice suit. I wasn't sure why. They said, you're going to go to a lot of weddings in AA, and you're going to go to a lot of funerals in AA. And it's been true. It's been my experience that I've gone to a lot of weddings, and I have gone to a number of funerals. Not all funerals are because someone picked up a drink. You know, I had the experience of watching a memorial service unfold last year for my sponsor after 30 years of sobriety who passed away. And that was the gift of AA, that I could be there sober and participate and send her off with love. And that's what AA has taught me. But primary, every morning I remind myself, just for today, I'm not going to drink, and I'll do whatever I need to do to stay on this road. And that's why I'm here tonight. So the gift of doing the Saturday night meeting is that I get to pick speakers, and I also get to piss people off in the asking of them to speak for me. And I asked a good buddy of mine, Lou, from Lakeland, to, I guess it was like 3 or 4 weeks ago, if he would speak, and he said, I'm not going to speak. And I said, oh, well, thank you for saying yes. And, that's so sweet of you. And he goes, no, I haven't talked in a while at a meeting, at a podium. And I said, well, this is perfect time. Then he found out he was going to be taped tonight, so if I'm beat up in the parking lot, just go after him. Lou saw me in my very early sobriety. I think I was about a year and a half when we first met. And he watched me go through many struggles, trials, and tribulation. As I told someone outside, it was like a country song gone bad and gone backwards. In and out of love, all messed up, miserable, and he would just stay the course with me and just love me through it. He's been like a brother and like family to me. Without any further ado, Lou.
I'm Lou, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. And today's the best day of my life since yesterday. And we'll get to that a little bit later on. Before I get too started, I'm a big-ass crybaby. So if we dig the handkerchief out, just wait a second. I'll get back with the program. You know, I like everybody else, I didn't get here for singing in church. I drank too much too long. I can remember very vividly the first time I got drunk. My dad was somewhat liberal. He'd let me have that much out of each bottle of beer as he finished it. And I got in the nice habit of asking him when he was about that far, and then it got a little closer to the top. And, you know, I could always have whatever I wanted to drink when I was at home as a kid. I started it, my earliest recollection was about 5 years old being drunk. And I enjoyed it. It was fun. I enjoyed the feeling. I got silly drunk most of the time. I didn't get into the nasty drunk till a lot later in my career. It just felt natural. It felt like something I should do. So I did it.
Sure.
Pardon?
I was just identifying.
Oh. It wasn't through my high school years a lot of drinking, but when I did go out to drink, I got drunk. I can never remember once that I left the house to go out and have a few drinks. I did not go out with the intention of getting drunk. Drove drunk as a teenager. Had a job when I was 16 in New York State, driving on a learner's permit at night, which was also illegal without an adult in the car. And I was working in a restaurant, and they used to keep the beer in the back. Well, you know, you had to go back there and get stuff out of the back room, so you'd pop a beer and stick it behind something and go back and get a little more beer a little later on. And pretty soon you were half-lit going home. And it was like that most of my early drinking career. Went into college, and it changed somewhat. They had beer blasts back when I was there, and beer was cheap, and I had some money. I was fortunate. I had some money. We could drink. We had beer in the apartment. We had whiskey in the apartment. And it just kept on and kept on. Well, through college, it was none of that bad stuff. It was always good times that I remember. All of the incidences. Myself and three other guys, we used to go to the JV basketball game with the pretense we were going to stay for the varsity game. But, you know, there was beer just down the street, and we used to go down there right after the JV game. Never did make the varsity. And never really made it to my house. I always ended up at my buddy's place sleeping it off that night. And his dad was a member of AA, which I did not realize at the time until sometime later. But he'd always get up in the morning and greet us with a rather large hello and how was everybody this morning? And, you know, we're scratching our heads out here, and that's okay. Still a good time. Still nothing bad has happened. No reason to change my way of doing things. Met a little girl while I was in college, and well, we decided tie the knot, so I... Well, let me back up just a little bit. My senior year at the University of Buffalo, my uncle was living across the street, and he had lots of booze in his place, and he liked to drink scotch. And I had never drank much scotch. Well, I got tangled up drinking scotch with him, and it was my last semester. It was finals week. I was on probation, and the night before the final, on the course that I was failing, I went over to BG's apartment, and we polished off at least two bottles of scotch. I don't remember going back to my apartment. I do not remember getting up the next day until 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, I'm on academic probation, and I figure, okay, I'm going to go right out the back door of the college, and the Army's going to draft me, and I don't want to go in the Army, so seeing I flunked out of school, I'll go join the Air Force, which, needless to say, enthused my father to no end. And so I did. I went and joined the Air Force. 2 days before I had to report for duty, I got my final report card. The course that I was failing, I got a C+ on. I don't remember taking the final. I don't remember driving to the school. But I must have done something because I got an A+ on the final, which pulled me from an F to a C. Still nothing bad is happening while I'm drinking. Everything's going good except to make a stupid decision. I spent 4 years in the Air Force. I don't know about the rest of the military branches, but I can tell you what, the Air Force can help you become a good alcoholic if that's the way you're headed. We had the 5-cent beers at the NCO club. You could go in there and you could just drink and drink and drink. And it wasn't near beer. I was stationed in New Jersey and used to go in there and drink a lot. An awful lot, according to my wife. She said I came home more nights drunk than she'd like to talk about. I managed to get through the 4 years in the service without getting written up, without getting in any trouble for the drinking. The military is a great place to drink. It really is. They tolerate it really well. You know, she, at that time, was getting a little irritated with my drinking, but nothing major. She was more irritated with my smoking. She was a registered nurse, and she just knew that the smoking was going to kill me. The drinking was okay, it was a problem, but the smoking was going to kill me. And we had two children while we were in the service, while I was in the service. And I remember those days because I didn't drink every day. I remember my boys being born, which was really a good thing. You know, I mean, I was there. This changed as my drinking changed. Come out of the military and moved to Florida, moved to Lakeland back in 1971. And it was a time when we didn't have two nickels to rub together. She was a registered nurse, so she got a job at the hospital and was making enough money to at least put food on the table. And with the help of a realtor whose wife's life she saved, we managed to buy a home. I had nothing to do with it. I was working as a used car salesman at the time. And drinking only on occasions because we didn't have a lot of money. But, you know, I still remember the boys through those years. I still remember them coming up. So we went like that for a couple of years, and then I took a job as an insurance agent. And in 1972, I was bringing home $3+ a week. And back then, that was pretty good money. With what she was making, we were doing really well. We were living pretty high on the hog. And I started drinking a little bit more. I started drinking more frequently, almost every weekend. Still, every time I drank to oblivion. We threw parties for friends of ours. I remember she had a bunch of friends that were nurses and ambulance people and like that. And the one night, we lived in a cul-de-sac. It was a BYOB, and two ambulance drivers showed up and their buddies, and they brought a bottle. And everybody's drinking and having a good old time. And the ambulance drivers got pretty shit-faced, excuse me, but they got pretty drunk. And they didn't get a call, but they decided at 2 o'clock in the morning they were better report in, so they went out and cranked up the ambulances, the sirens, and drove slowly out of the neighborhood, which made us real popular the next day. You know. And we used to throw New Year's Eve parties. And as I look back on it, it was really kind of funny, almost hypocritical funny. If we got invited to our New Year's Eve party, if you came in and I thought you had too much to drink, I'd take your keys away from you, but I'd drive you home. I don't ever remember getting back, but I drove a lot of people home. we had a good time through those years. It changed. I was 32 years old, and things had changed, and my drinking had gotten a lot stronger. And I can remember literally sitting down one Thursday evening and going, you know, if that's all there is to this friggin' life, and I have so much fun drinking, guess what? And that was the last sober breath I drew till I was 44. I drank every day. I drank a lot. In my late drinking career, I could put away, on an average, of 2 cases of beer a night, and on a good Saturday, I could do 2 cases of beer and a bottle of whiskey. The kids used to count my drinks. Until they knew, they counted till they said until I got to 18 drinks. And when I got to 18, they'd leave the room and leave me alone. I don't even remember leave me alone because I was drunk, but because I was such a nasty drunk. And at somewhere around 18 drinks, I got really nasty and really bitter. I don't remember a lot of this. I don't, you know, when I first came around to fellowship, they said, people were talking about blackouts. And I said to the wife, I said, you know, that's funny. I said, I don't know anything about blackouts. Well, there's 12 years of my life I don't remember. They're gone. Literally. It's just, there was 2 occasions during that 12 years that I didn't drink for 3 days at a time, and that's when I was babysitting my alcoholic uncle. He was drinking, but because he was an alcoholic, I wouldn't drink around him. And I was with him twice for 3 days. He died of cirrhosis of the liver. We managed to get through that 12-year period of my drinking. I'm not sure how. I know that it was not my fault. Nothing I did. I've been told that I would chase her around the house in a drunken stupor and tear her down. This hurts. I never hit her, but I would belittle her, give her the pain that I was feeling. Yeah, in a minute. This is what alcohol did for me. It gave me pain, actual pain. I wanted to hurt people. Not physically hurt them. No, that was temporary. I wanted to belittle people. I wanted to make them feel really shitty. Make them think that they were lower than I am. Okay? And I was good at it, they tell me. She told me that in the divorce court. So we're getting through that. We get to the near end of that 12-year period. And I'm thinking there's something wrong with me. I don't know what it is, but there's something wrong with me. 3 days before I arrived at the day at the doors of AA, my oldest son put a shotgun in my belly, and he said, "You know I'm gonna shoot you, you drunken bastard. You know, father, you're a drunken bastard. The bad part is I'm afraid he'll pull the trigger." Thank God he did. He's a friend today. He's more than a son. Both of my boys. They let me play with my grandchildren. A miracle. Back then, they didn't want me around. And I don't blame them. Those are painful memories. That's one of the reasons I don't go back out. I don't need that shit. I've been there. I've seen that city. It ain't for me. So anyhow, I get through this, and I quit drinking at that point. 3 days later, I'm sitting in the house, and I'm shaking like this, and I'm crying. And the next minute, I'm laughing and shaking like this, and I'm going absolutely out of my mind. And I said, "You know, maybe you're an alcoholic. Maybe there's something wrong with you because you're not drinking and this is what's happening to you." So I called the 2720 Club. And Don Cody, and I use his name because he's passed away sober. I told him what was going on. I told him what I thought. He says, "He says, you got any alcohol?" I said, "No, I don't." "No, I'm sorry." He says, "You got any Gatorade or honey?" I said, "Are you out of your mind? Who drinks Gatorade and honey?" He says, "You got any alcohol?" I said, "Yeah." And Suzanne can verify the bar I had. She saw it was empty when she saw it, but she can tell you I had a bar. We talked for a minute. He says, "Well, I'll tell you what." He says, "Pour yourself a big old glass of booze, drink it, and come on down." I said, "God dog it, I'm home. These people are doing what I want to do and they're going to show me how to do it." So I drank the glass. It was almost a full water glass that size. And I went down. And I drove to my first meeting at the 2720 Club in Lakeland. I showed up in a year-old 27-foot motorhome. Okay? Now, before I even get to the door, they're taking bets that I'm not going to stay sober till tomorrow morning, let alone any longer than that. We went to a meeting that night, myself, Don, and a good friend of mine up in New York, Nick. And that was how I got introduced to AA. So I'm sitting around the club, and my sponsor worked at the club. He used to get there about 5 in the morning. I'd get there at 5 in the morning. If he was there, I was there. Went to a lot of meetings at the club. And I'm in the DTs. I am shaking. I'm literally unable to take a whole cup of coffee and get it to my mouth. I'm carrying a bottle of Gatorade and honey with me, by the way, because when it got really bad, I'm drinking the Gatorade and honey. I was 21 days sober, and I walked in shaking, and I said to Don, I said, "Don, I said, how long do these things last?" He said, "Lou, how long did you drink?" I said, "Oh, hell no. No, 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 no. That's not going to happen." I shook for 2 more days. 25 days after I got sober, I went to a ears, nose, and throat doctor. I had a really severe sore throat. Good friend of mine. He did his examination, and he looked at me. He says, "Lou," he says, "now this is July 27th. He said, "if you don't quit smoking," he says, "you're going to send me to Europe by Christmas because I'm going to cut your voice box out. You're going to have cancer." I said, "It's that close." He says, "It's that close." So here I am, 25 days sober, and now I'm going to quit smoking 4 packs of cigarettes a day. For anybody to sponsor somebody, don't let your sponsorees do that. Whatever you do, don't let them do it. Now, there's no way to win with that. If I felt good, I wanted a cigarette. If I felt bad, I wanted a drink. If I felt good, I wanted a drink. Or if I felt bad, I wanted a cigarette. It didn't matter. I wanted one or the other. There was no winning. I remember my one prayer that I said for the first 6 months of my sobriety. "Please today, no wine, whiskey, beer, booze, cigar, cigarette, pipe, tobacco. Please remove the craving for, the desire to use and abuse." That was it. For 6 months, that was my only prayer every morning. It worked. It worked. Thank God. The cancer has never appeared. Every time I get a sore throat, I get scared to death. But you know. So now we're at July 27th. July 30th, my mother gets diagnosed with, well, back up. July 3rd, my now ex moves out of the house, moves to Tampa, and says she's had enough of this drunken bastard. July 30th, my mother gets diagnosed with brain cancer and is given a short time to live. My partners in the business that I started and brought them into decided that on the 15th of the next month, August, that I could have as much time away from work as I needed to try and get myself straightened out. They gave me 10 days. And that didn't quite work out. But the funny thing was, I must have been just coherent enough that I started asking questions. Because at the end of August, they offered to remove me from the partnership. And I said, "Okay, that's fine." So that rocked on. My mother passed away in October. My ex-wife filed for divorce in August. It became final 5 days before our 25th wedding anniversary. That was in September. My mother passed away in October. And my dad wanted nothing to do with me. My partners had thrown me out, which was well over $1 million worth of income in the next 10 years. My last year sober, my income tax bill was $49,000. That's what I paid the government. My first 12 months sober, my gross income was $10,000. And I'm driving around in a year and a half old motorhome that drinks about 5 miles to the gallon. Yeah. We ate peanut butter and jelly. But I kept thinking, you know, all that money I spent on booze, I'll have a lot of money when I finally get a job. Well, it was a year, well, it was actually 1990. Well, let's go back to 1990. And I met the lovely lady, 1991. I met the lovely lady I'm married to today. She's not here. And that's by my choice, I want to say. I have never been a believer in somebody sharing their story that spouses, unless they're a member of the fellowship, should be there. That's just me personal. I'm not telling you you should do that or you shouldn't. She is not in the fellowship. I met her one day. She was working as a guard at the mobile home park where her parents live, and I drove in. I was, we were selling golf course equipment. That was a nice job, by the way. That was sweet. I played golf on some of the best courses in the state of Florida for free. I enjoyed that. Didn't pay well, $10,000 first year, but I had a lot of fun. I played the new Disney courses before they opened, which was also very sweet. And anyhow, I drove in. She was working the gate. And I said, you know, I like the looks of her. So I went in, did what I had to do with the superintendent, made my presentation, drove out, asked her for a date. She says, well, I have a policy against dating anybody the first time I meet them. I said, okay, I understand that. So deliberately, I did not go back by there for 3 weeks. And then I went by, and she says, where have you been? I said, I've worked. And we've been married since 1993, coming up on, well, next year will be 20 years. Anyhow, she never knew me drinking. The years since then have been good to me, beyond belief good to me. As an old-timer in the fellowship said, and he said, you know, I said, I got here and I threw crumbs out on the water, and I said, I've gotten ham sandwiches back. I've gotten ham sandwiches back. I got a job in 1993 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, as the national sales manager for a factory. The first, you know what the first question they asked me was? Now, they knew me from the 80s. The first question, are you still drinking? And I said, no. I said, I haven't drank since 1988. Now, did I get the job because of it? I don't know. I think so. You know, I really do. Good things will happen. They do happen. But we got to get out of the way. We got to clean up our act. We got to quit drinking. We got to quit whatever other substances we use. We got to lay off those. And the good things will happen. That's why today is the best day of my life since yesterday. No matter how bad today is, it's still better than yesterday because I'm sober today. Well, I had the job in Louisiana. I got to travel over all of the southeast from New Mexico back this way, all the way to the Canadian border, except the New England states, and Pennsylvania and Kentucky. I got to get over to AA meetings in all those states, every one of them. Meet people like you wouldn't believe. I went to a little meeting just outside of Dallas, Texas. Excuse me, and there was a guy there, and I just turned a liking to him right off the bat. He was about my age now, back then. And I had to be in that area about every 6-8 weeks, and I got to know him pretty well. He was a farmer, and a wealthy farmer, a very, very wealthy farmer. And he's still sober today. I got to meet a guy in Cullman, Alabama. Stands about 6'4". He said when he came to the fellowship, he weighed about 87 pounds and green stuff was coming out of every orifice of his body. We stay in contact weekly. Haven't seen him personally. Well, I drove up and saw him a few years ago, but we haven't gotten together personally in some time. But we have one thing in common. That's this fellowship. That's being sober. Even that far away, just hearing his voice and knowing he's still alive, I'm not the only alcoholic left in the world. It's a great thing. You know, he says, well, he says, you're my sponsor. I said, I'm too far away for that. But you know what? If he's got a problem or I got a problem, we can talk about it. And he's just been a good, good friend. Really good friend. So back to the job in Louisiana. We lived down there. We had a little house down on the river. We'd go out on Lake Pontchartrain on the boat. Go out on the Mississippi River if we wanted to. Great times. Things that I'd always thought I'd like to do, I got to do them sober. I can remember them. Unlike that 12 years of my life where my boys were growing up that I don't remember. The things that happened, some of it I'll never know. You know, you talk about doing a fourth and fifth step. Almost without fail, it's less frequent today than it was, but once a month, something will come to me in a dream, in a just a moment of stargazing, you want to call it, that, you know, you did that drunk. You actually did that to them. It's scary. I drove all the time. Cute story today. I knew all the state troopers based in Lakeland. I knew all the sheriffs because of the business I was in. I knew them personally. They came by the shop and bought stuff from us. I had a pickup truck. There was always empty beer cans on the dashboard that got thrown up there because I always had to have two or three beers to get me on that 20-minute drive home. I rear-ended a guy just off the interstate, and the trooper showed up. I had the two teenage boys. And I remember telling him, you know, Joe, I really can't have this go on my insurance. He says, okay. He says, will you fix that guy's truck? I said, sure. I said, all it is a bumper. I'll buy it. The guy almost got a ticket for giving the trooper a hard time. He let me ride without a ticket for anything because I was willing, and I knew him and paid for it. Why I didn't get a DUI? I never got one while I was drinking and driving. I deserved one. Every time I got behind the wheel, I deserved one. There was no doubt of that. I've seen reports of people with blood alcohol count of 4. I know I was there. You don't drink that kind of booze and not get there. It's impossible. Sober breath, there wasn't many of them for 12 years of my life. I miss the memories. That there's a big blank in there. I just miss it. It's like, well, I tell my sponsor, of course, you know, the one saving grace on this whole thing is I'm really not 68 years old. I'm only 56 years old. So I got a lot of life left in front of me. He keeps telling me I got funny math, but, you know. The ride sober is just unbelievable. As long as I do a few things. Get up in the morning, say my prayers, and get the hell out of the way. And I have to put it that way because I have to get out of the way. I have a Class A ego, and it gets in the way. If anybody can fix it, Lou can fix it. There's no doubt in anybody's mind. You guys all got doubts, but none in mine, so nobody's got a doubt. You know, right? Just ask me. I'll tell you I can fix it. Yeah, she's been a thorn in my side, but a good thorn. She helped me through some hard times just by her example. Anyhow, had the job in Louisiana, still not drinking, and everything was going good. The company decided that we needed to part company, and that's a long politically involved story with bad politics between myself and the comptroller. Anyhow, I'm not going to bore you with all that junk. We parted company. My wife and I started a business. Now, mind you, she had been single for 17 years. So pretty much on her own, running her own little business. Now, all of a sudden, we open a business in Louisiana. We're together 24/7. Mm-hmm. We have been together 24/7 since 1998. If we're awake, we're together. We still own our own business. We still work it together. It's been an interesting run. Not a run that would have ever happened if I was still drinking. Never would have happened. You know. And we're doing okay. We really are. You know, for a couple of old people, we're really doing good. Life is good today. Suzanne and I go back, you know, she said 23 years. 22 and a half, 23 years. And I know there was times I irritated her. Deliberately.
Shock, good.
Yeah, shock, right? She was. She's always been a scrappy young lady, but she's always been a lady since I've known her, and she's been good for me. She really has. We went through some hard times together. She helped me. I helped her. At least she says I did. I don't know. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. Today, I don't think about drinking today. I don't see bars when I drive down the street. I don't see them. There's nothing. I was coming over, and there's a ton of billboards on the side of the road on the interstate. And I did notice, just because I was thinking about the meeting and thinking about drinking and all that, you know, and the times when I was drinking, and I saw one sign that was relevant to alcohol. That's the first billboard that I have noticed with alcohol on it in a long, long time. I don't see that stuff today. It holds nothing for me. What it holds for me, I don't want. You know, I came here to get happy. I came here to live joyous and free. Maybe not the first day, but that's what happened in the first 6 months. And that's the way it's going to stay. Because I just don't need that. I know where that pain is. I know where that misery is. I know where that SOB that's hiding up here in the back of my head, I know where he lives. I know how to access him. I don't need to go back there today. There's nothing that tells me I have to go back there today. There was a big old burly Canadian. He was a heavyweight champion, boxing champion in Canada. He stood about this tall. And I was about 30 days sober. And he came into a meeting and he started with, "My name is Jim and I will never drink again." And I thought, I never heard what he said after that. I said, "Well, you arrogant SOB. How can you sit there and say you will never drink again?" What I didn't hear him say that night, I did the next night. If I go to meetings, read a big book, and got a higher power. Oh yeah, just don't forget about the sponsor. You know, it's that simple. It really is. Unzip that zipper, let that sponsor look inside of you. That sponsor knows before you know that you want to drink. They know before you know when your thinking's getting stupid. We all get stupid. My sponsor all summer long is up north. I pick up the phone and call him, and he just that quick. Okay, what's wrong? What's your problem? What do you think is wrong? Yeah, my problem is Lou. I get in the way. My thinking gets in the way. That's what happens. I don't want to brag, but I don't see anything out there that alcohol can give me that this fellowship can't give me five times better. Just five times better. You want the pain? Go ahead, go back out there. I was working with a woman many years ago, and her boyfriend was drinking Listerine, claiming he wasn't an alcoholic. I gave her $40. I says, "Go buy him two bottles of the best whiskey you can get." She said, "Well, I can't do that. If he drinks the whiskey, he'll think he's an alcoholic." I said, "What do you think he is?" What? Come on. On the other hand, you have guys like my godfather's nephew, who him and I go fishing together on different occasions up into Canada, to the island. And then after I got sober, the first time we went up there, I was about 3.5 years sober. We get into Canada, we get over, to go over to the island, we pick up some food, and he says, "Lou," he says, can I buy a case of beer?" "Yeah, you can buy a case of beer." I says, "Prefer you put it in the fridge, or, you know, put it in the back of the fridge, don't leave it in the door where I can see it the minute I open the door." He said, "Okay." So that was on a Sunday. Thursday evening, he says to me, he says, "Lou," he says, "do you think I'm an alcoholic?" And I got up and I walked over and I opened up the refrigerator. There was 14 beers left in the refrigerator. I said, "No, I don't think you're going to qualify." I'm not sure, but... he might someday, but he's got a long way to go. And I guess it's funny. I remember that Thursday night, making that decision to just go ahead and quit fighting it and just drink. The manager for the Publix grocery store, where I bought my Natural Light beer, came to me 3 weeks after I got sober. I was in there buying some groceries. He came to me and he says, "Did you quit drinking?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "I got 22 cases of natural light beer back there waiting for you. What are we going to do?" I said, "Well, you send it back or sell it. I don't know, but I'm not drinking anymore." And my youngest son, he came over to the house 2 days after I got to the fellowship. And he says, "What are we going to do with the booze?" I says, "We're going to throw it out." Which the old timers back then, that was a cardinal sin. They would have taken the booze, put it in their trunks, and carried it around to help the alcoholics that they ran into. They ran into a different breed of alcoholic than we see today as far as where they're at in their drinking. Today we get them out of recovery centers, and they're pretty well sobered up. But anyhow, we dumped 5 big trash cans full of whiskey bottles out of that bar. Yeah, I had a well-stocked bar. And it was a big one, too. And I built it just for that purpose, to have it there. And I enjoyed it. You know, like I said, my early drinking days, they were good days. Then alcohol turned on me. And it started to control me. And that's when the fun ended. That's when I should have quit. But it took 12 years of active, hard drinking before I figured it out. Would I change it? Probably not, because that's what I had to do to get where I am today and be able to enjoy the blessings that I've got in my life today. Thanks.